Hello, everyone, and good evening. This is Esperanza Thoray, your radio show host from New Consciousness, New World. And I'm very excited because tonight we have with us a wonderful guest. Her name is Rana Prince. And Rana is the producer of The Sacred Journey of the Heart, a feature film on the science and spirit of our connection. And she, in this documentary, Rana talks about, she basically interviews best-selling authors, indigenous elders, scientists, and spiritual leaders. And the wonderful aspect, I think, about her documentary, what really makes it very unique, is that she talks about the groundbreaking film on how modern science is converging with ancient spirituality traditions to create a shift that we've all been waiting for. And isn't it interesting that finally science is catching up with spirituality. Rana, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am great, Esperanza. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you, and very happy to have you on the show. I know the last time we had some technical difficulties, so I'm glad you're finally able to make it this time. And I would like to talk about your documentary. Before we go into that documentary, can you give us a little bit of a background? What brought you to this place, to the point where you are and the point where you decided to create this documentary? Were there any specific events, situations that led you to this point?
Well, there was a series of events, and really the primary reason I wanted to do the documentary is I was taking my clients. I'm a spiritual intuitive counselor, and I've learned a lot of different processes and practices that were helping my clients go through transitions, major life transitions like change of jobs and loss of relationship and all kinds of things. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting if we filmed the process of taking people out of their ordinary routine and into sacred sites around the world to show how they, and that's the key word, they transform. So that was my idea. And, you know, just to get to that place took a long time because I spent 15, 16 years in the world of corporate banking. So how do you go from banking to be a spiritual counselor taking people on sacred sites tours? That's another story. But it was really, you know, the universe telling me it was time to step out and do something new. And my inspiration was, let me show you have to step out of the ordinary routine to really go into a profound transformation. And I learned throughout, about halfway through the filming process, it wasn't about what they were doing out there. This was a process to lead me deeper into my own heart's journey, show up authentically, and reveal, you know, the secrets of how every person is led step by step into that deeper heart connection with their true and authentic self.
Yeah. And I agree with you 100%. Now, I thought it was interesting that you mentioned that you were in corporate banking because, you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, I have to be focused on spirituality. What I'm noticing is you have a very extensive background. You obviously been in corporate America for a while, and then you obviously were also behind the scenes or in front of the scenes, whichever, also doing these alternative spiritual practices, which have led you on where you are right now. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that there's a lot of people, and my understanding is these are people who are called at this point to teach, are being called out of their traditional lives, out of corporate America, into the spiritual arena to specifically help with the teaching to unfold the spiritual world that's going to be taking place.
That's a very succinct and beautiful description of the process that I went through and that I see, as you do, many other people doing that. And, you know, not everyone is called to teach. And I always say to people, be careful what you're teaching, because you're going to be tested if you're living it authentically. And I thought I was, which was the kind of the surprising part for myself until I saw the first footage from the editor coming back to me. I looked like I was scared to death. Here I am on this film talking about spiritual principles. I was behind the scenes for years doing this as sort of like a personal practice. And then when I stepped out and did it as a service I was providing to others, I was no longer behind the scenes, but I put myself in front of the camera, which is an interesting thing to do because I thought I had it figured out. But when I saw that footage coming in, I looked at myself and I said, I am nowhere near being capable of sitting in front of the camera and being heart-faced. The only thing that was moving on camera was my lips. The rest of me looked like the deer in the headlights. You know, something's coming at me and I don't know what it is. So it was a very like revealing moment. You know, when you asked me about, was there a moment? That was the moment, seeing that footage coming back going, I'm making a film basically not about what's happening out there, but what's going on inside my own heart. And that led me down into my own personal, really true, deep healing journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it seems like one of the things I notice is a lot of parallelism. Oh, excuse me. But there's a lot of synchronicity between the paths, even though each one has their own individual differences. There is a lot of similarities. I agree, because I've been experiencing some of the challenges that you've been experiencing in my own personal spiritual growth. Someone was talking to me the other day, and she made a very interesting point. She said, it's one thing to recognize a truth and to know a truth, and another one to actually practice it. And I call that aspect experiencing, because that's what it is to me. It's you're experiencing that truth when yourself, and you keep getting tested until you grow. But the other thing that I find very interesting, what you said about not being prepared, is that spirit has this sense of humor where you're kind of put in the fire in order to learn the process, because in reality, I'm not sure that there's another way to do it, to be honest.
Well, and if we had to prepare to jump into the fire, none of us would do it. I don't think so. I was just, you know, I jumped in, and it's called the fool's leap by many. I'm just going to jump in and into this process and see what happens. And, you know, I used to call myself an accidental filmmaker, because the project was really supposed to be sort of a small little video for clients to say, here, come on these trips with me. And it turned out to be a much bigger project as I opened my heart and continue to ask other people, like you mentioned in the introduction, Greg Braden and Dr. Joe Dispenza and Mary Morrissey, and Colleen Tipping, will you be part of this project? And they all said, well, okay. They didn't know me per se. They had some recommendations that I was, you know, working on an interesting project, but I couldn't prepare for this. It was like the universe kept showing up and saying, do you really mean this? How big is this going to get? Is this just about a few clients out there, or is this about something global? And that's what the film ended up being, the global connection between our personal hearts and the heart of the entire earth as we go through this transformation.
Right. And that's one of the things I was going to ask you. How did you connect with all these people? Because, like you said, you really didn't know these people that well, but you had at least, obviously, someone who did know these people and was able to act as a liaison or a bridge between you and them to connect. Because these are very well known, and obviously you now are among them. They're very well known. I've known Greg Braden since when he first wrote the God book, the God Code, excuse me, which was, I think it was his second book at that point. And, you know, some of these people, I have to say, I don't recognize, but that doesn't mean anything, because I don't know everybody that's out there. There are so many beautiful, extraordinary spiritual beings out there that it's wonderful that you did this. What led you on? I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but I don't think it's that simple. What really motivated you to put all this stuff together? I mean, to connect with these people and to reach out? Because if it were me, I would be a little hesitant to say, wow, I don't need these people. How can I just reach out to them?
Well, I did have some wonderful supporters, and there's a woman in Sedona, that Karen Kebnick of Stellar Productions Live, that was putting on conferences, and she still does. The next one's coming up in February 2014, headlined by Greg Braden, called The Gift and the Shift, and she was supporting me from early on, because she realized that I was doing some powerful work with people in transition. And she also helped me organize some of the international trips that I've taken with my clients to Glastonbury and Stonehenge and Machu Picchu and Egypt and Mexico to the Mayan temples. And so she was very familiar with my work and was bringing people like Greg Braden and Joe Dispenza into Sedona, and said, would you like to be part of the conference? And as part of the conference, she then vouched for me, because she'd seen me in action, you know, in trips and in the work that I was doing in what I would call right now very high level woo-woo metaphysics. I was channeling, I was connecting with archangels and guides, and it was wonderful and fun work. And and originally the film was going to have a lot of that in there, me channeling in Stonehenge. How cool was that? I thought, you know,
right.
Then we got into it, and I, when I realized this was about me getting authentic with me, it was not about, you know, the spiritual realm out there, but how do we live a purposeful, heart-centered life here on planet Earth, where we happen to be? What a concept. And so Karen would introduce me to almost everyone in the film. And so, you know, it just takes that one person that starts to open doorways. And of course, then the people of the caliber that I was working with had to also, you know, kind of tune in to the authenticity of the project. But Greg was a very early supporter of the project, and you get one person like that to say yes, and then you sort of have a momentum, and other people say, well, if Craig's in on this, then it must be okay. So it was just the doorways that were opening, and I showed up at the right place at the right time. And even though I didn't know what the film was all about, these people were willing to continue to support me in the evolving script of the film as it transformed. Probably 95% of the content that is in there, it was new. It wasn't the original idea I had. So it's about being flexible as things changed.
Well, I'm going to share a little bit something with you about that, not knowing where things are going. I've noticed that you just transitioned possibly in full time around 2009 is what I'm guessing based on your the information that's out there about you. Interesting. So all of this, gradually, you left your corporate life in 2009, and then you started full time doing this, correct?
I actually left in 2003, but I was hiding behind a facade of you know, closing my eyes and interfacing with the world in connection with spirit. It was kind of in 2009 when I said, "Hey, I'm here on Earth. I need to open my eyes and be present here instead of out there, you know, in crop circles and with guides and angels," I think. So I've been doing the work of counseling and sort of high metaphysical channeling and things. But it was in 2009 when I said, it's time for me to really be who I am here on this planet. You know what I mean? I was ungrounded. I was living in sort of like the, you know, in the world where I wasn't dealing with my emotions, which I think is what we're really here to do, is deal with our bodies and our emotions and all the interfaces in between.
Yeah, that's right. And you formed a corporation called Global Wholeness. I love the name. That is very, you know, in regards to what you were saying a little bit earlier that I said I was going to share a little bit with you, it was very interesting because I was told to keep low-key until last year. And it was last year, actually, that I went to Mexico to the Mayan temples there, Chichen Itza. And that I was told, this is your public life, it's starting now. So I'm still looking at the name for my organization. I'm calling it Research Center for Inner Awareness, but it's so long. So, but I like your name. It's very short. It's very to the point. So it's beautiful.
Well, it actually also went through a transformation because I started this nonprofit organization within about a month after we came back from filming in Glastonbury, and I actually called it Global Healing Corporation. And then I realized in reading some of the things of Greg Braden's, I think it was The Divine Matrix, if I call this company Global Healing, we're perpetually in the process of healing. What if we just call it Global Wholeness? We are truly in reality already whole. And so I went through a large transformation of not just my awareness of myself, because as I revealed in the process of the film, I'd gone through a period of 10 years of incest and sexual abuse in my childhood. And I was never going to put that in the film. Believe me, that was not part of what I was going to present. But I realized if I'm perpetually healing, I'm never whole. And the reality is we're all whole. It's just remembering that and awakening to that potential when we find our true and divine essence. And that's what ended up, I changed the name of the corporation, changed the direction of the film, and changed my perception of myself, which really created the momentum to finish the film into the product it is today.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's very interesting because I haven't fully felt comfortable yet with the name yet, but it is the experiencing. I mean, the knowledge has been there for some time to some degree, although a lot of new stuff is coming in as well. And like you, I had this plan as to what I was going to be teaching, the workshops and all this. And I started writing the workshop, you know, to update some of the, you know, the conditioning that goes into the workshop. And all of a sudden it was like, this is all going to be new. So, you know, absolutely. It's, I find it very humorous. Now, I also love the name of the you chose for this documentary, because of the fact that, to me, in these last, I mean, I've always had a special place for the heart, because I know it's through the heart that you connect to your divine connection, and also through that to the ultimate divine connection. So the sacred journey of the heart is such a right-on, a perfect name of what we all go through, this transitioning. And especially in these last few months, so it's kind of interesting that you come into my life at just when I recognize that I have to not only be meditating and also at the same time actively sending out love to take away from that negativity or the resentment or the frustration we build up in our lives, the things that don't work out, and how the heart, if we can come from the heart, can heal, can clean, can bring wholeness into that aspect of who we are, so that we can get away from that.
Well, you're obviously very intuitive, because the title of the film has a lot of power, and it's power that I would call super consciousness, at the level of super consciousness, because one of my great passions is numerology. And one of the things I help with my clients is, let's look at the vibration of the name of what you're putting out there, whether it's a project or a book title. I very specifically created Sacred Journey of the Heart, or Not to the Heart, or anything else, because Sacred Journey of the Heart in numerology is 111. And I use Pythagorean numerology. This is one of my real passions, where it's absolute. A is 1 and B is 2 and C is 3. It can't be anything other than 111. So even before I asked anybody, Greg Braden or any of the other people in the film, I had crafted the title, because I knew that this 111, 111 vibration would create a magnetic energy. And so that's one of the things I love doing. And you mentioned the title of your work, and I'd love to do the numerology of that and just see what that is and what's the magnetism of it, because that's a super conscious connection, communication about what it is we're putting out there, and it attracts a certain type of energy. So I love that you're so intuitive to hone into the title of the film. It was very, very consciously created by me.
Well, it's really interesting. All you said another key word that I've been using, and you're the only other person who I've heard say this word. I mean, there's a lot of talk about quantum physics, quantum consciousness, fifth dimensional consciousness. However, you're the first person I've heard to say super conscious. And that's exactly, that was originally the title of my workshop. I then changed it to sanctuary, because that's what we were creating, a sanctuary. Through the workshop. However, the super conscious, the divine consciousness, multidimensional functioning is what it's about. So yeah, I mean, this is wonderful.
Yeah. And I just, you know, super conscious. I have this awesome, being a banker, I knew how to run Excel spreadsheets and write formulas. So I can just instantly, what I call, calibrate the vibration of anything. So, you know, I know that right now super conscious is 62. Well, six plus two is eight. So that's a balance between the spiritual world and the physical world. Mm-hmm. You know, so I that would be a different topic, maybe a different show, but I love doing.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I love numerology, but I have to say, I really don't have too much experience except for being able to add up some of the numbers.
Right.
And that's about as far as I go.
Yeah, it's the interpretation of them, I guess, where it comes in. But, you know, you can't add your name, you know, and have it be anything other than what it is, the one in your birth certificate. So I was very deliberately creating an energetic field for the film. And so, you know, that in some way, that's how I can explain. How did people like Dr. Joe Dispenza, who was in What the Bleep, a lot of people know his fantastic work on Change Your Brain, or Change Your Habits and Change Your Life. And, you know, he was not someone introduced by someone else, but we just called him up and he said, okay, sounds good. You know, he didn't know that Greg Braden was in it, and we were able to bring him into the film, and he's a wonderful addition because we think of him as someone who really specializes in neurology and the brain, but he's very heart-centered, a wonderful, wonderful teacher that contributed so much in our film.
Yeah, I'm kind of biased to Greg Braden, too, because of the fact that we have a similar background from the corporate America. So being both having our background in engineering and specifically working with the Department of Defense, it was very interesting and very enlightening to meet someone else that, you know, had this background and had shifted over to the spiritual, which is really had been my passion. But even though I was doing the engineering work when I was traveling, I was being shown in places and do energy work here, to go here, go there. And I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. I call that following your heart because it doesn't really make any sense. And that's what I say to a lot of my clients. They're saying, I can't think of the right answers anymore. So, well, A, there's no right answers. And B, you're right. You can't think your way through what's going on right now. And that's why this heart-based shift that's happening on the planet, like Dr. Deborah Rosman from the Institute of Heart Math says, this is the new frontier. We've got to become conversant and intelligent on how we feel about things and make the connection from the heart to the head, where we reveal in my film from the Institute of Heart Math. That's where the action is. 80-90% of the signals that tell the brain what to do originate in the heart. It's, as Dr. Roland McCready says, it's not even a close competition. And when I screen this film in public audiences, pretty much everybody misses the next 2 to 3 minutes of the film because they're all having to talk about this. It's so stunning to people to realize that, you know, the scientists can look at the signals from the nervous system that are efferent versus afferent. I don't need to, you know, go into scientific detail too much, but the ones that send a signal, and they can tell this from one place to another, are afferent, and 80-90% of these signals going from the heart to the brain are the ones that are originating the information. And so we've got some great content right after, but I pretty much know that people miss most of that because they're so stunned by this fact that the heart is really what's sending information to the brain to tell it what to do.
I believe that, like I said, I've always believed the heart is the connection to the higher self and to the divine that is within us all, and then through our divine essence to the ultimate divine, which is the angels, the hierarchies of light, and God ultimately. So it basically resonates perfectly with what everything we are saying makes perfect sense. One of the other questions I wanted to ask you is, you talk about the personal journey of your heart, and how did that transform? I would ask, I guess, how long did that transformation take? Because you brought up another good point, and it's through the heart that you act, is not through the mind. I agree. I've always called it living on faith, but you're right on. I think the heart is the perfect word. Because I made a commitment to spirit a bunch of years ago, and since then I've been living on what I call faith and going by your guts, your intuition, and the heart. Even though I don't understand it and it hurts sometimes, I still feel compelled to move forward. So share with us your own personal story, please.
Well, I you know, grew up in a household, I mentioned it, where, you know, it looked okay from the outside of parents that were, you know, musicians, and my dad was a band director, but behind the scenes there was a lot of, you know, manipulation and sexual abuse going on. And I knew from very early on, even at age 5, I made a promise. I said, if, you know, because I had to shut my heart down to live. And you don't have to go through shocking and horrific abuse to make this decision. I think a lot of kids in our culture still to this day get the feedback, I'm rewarded for my thoughts and the things that I can repeat here in school and my parents, and I'm punished for my feelings. You know, just watch a kid have a tantrum in a grocery store and they're punished pretty swiftly and immediately. So it's not just to say if you have something horrific, but I had that happen in my life. And I said, I remember promising myself at age 5, if I ever can open my heart back up, and I'm sure it wasn't this, you know, cognitive about it, but then if I can do this, I'll share an important message with the world. And so I just sort of went by and I endured and did what I was supposed to do, tried to tell lots of people along the years, but nobody would listen to me. And so finally, when the abuse stopped at age 13, that became a period of great anxiety for me because I couldn't anticipate, there was never a period where I could be safe for a day or two. And so I ended up with such anxiety, and this is where emotions and the physical body come into play. I couldn't handle it. My body manifested a tumor because the anxiety was so intense, and I couldn't talk to anybody in my life about, my mother or anyone. But I got this thing growing on my spine, and I'm terribly afraid. So one night I was praying in my room, and this presence of light and unconditional love, like I can't explain it in human terms because it was just overwhelmingly peaceful and exhilarating at the same time. But this presence started talking to me and said, we have a purpose for you. And when it's time, we're going to call you and ask you to show up in the world and use your true gifts. Because I had always been very intuitive, whether that was a survival skill or a gift, I think it's probably some of both. And so this presence said, we're going to get up and you tell your mother about this growth that's on your back and you'll get it taken care of. But when it's time, we're going to call you. So I never forgot that. I told my mother about it. Tumor was removed and it was benign. I went on and lived my life and did all the things that I thought I was supposed to do, get married and have my four kids and climb the ladder in corporate America. And then it came to the turning point where, I had lost three jobs in 3 years and I kept hearing this, feeling this tap on my shoulder. It's time. It's time. And I'm like, this is weird. I'm a banker. I don't want to do this. It wasn't like, oh, yes, I'll just skip merrily down the path and start showing up as a spiritual intuitive counselor. I was kicking and screaming the whole way because this was too strange, but I knew I had to do it. And it took two, I lost my first job and it took two more tries before I said, this is really it. And so then I started in 2003. I said, okay, I'm gonna do the spiritual counseling thing. I can connect with these higher energies, intelligences, and bring in the energy of divine love. And the doors just flew open. People said, sure, here's our client list. I'm gonna do a workshop on living in ascended master energies, whatever, Sure, here's our entire, and it was like green light. And I just didn't miss a beat, other than I was, as I said, kicking and screaming behind the scenes saying this is weird. But I did it, and then, it just was a process where I was still interfacing not from the heart. I was in the world of spirit, which is really, it's not mental. It's not heart. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but it's just pure consciousness.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't sitting face to face, heart to heart with my clients, looking at them, experiencing their pain, their grief, their loss, their confusion, until I went through this process and attempting to make the film, which took a whole entire turn when I had to face my own, hidden and buried emotions, and then really get authentically grounded where today, I really just am present, fully present, in the work I do and with the clients I interface with, and I'm very grateful for the journey, even though I would never have probably consciously signed up for it, as you probably can relate to.
Yeah. Well, my story is a little bit different. I mean, granted, there are similarities. The difference I would say is I've known about what I was supposed to do beforehand. For example, when I I would have preferred to study psychology if it were up to me. However, it was recommended through spirit that I study computer science and I get my degree in engineering in computer science, and then became into engineering. And then I, through my work, I actually was traveling, and I mean, granted, I had a regular role when I went traveling. However, the opportunities presented themselves to do work in the areas I was in, so I did. And my situation was a bit of impatience because I knew these things were supposed to happen. And like I mentioned to you, it wasn't until 2012 that I was told, okay, your public life starts as of June 2012. So I was like, okay. I had my radio show, and I was told that part of my purpose was to help other spiritual people to get their words out, to get, to let out their, share their story, as well as the additional work I'm supposed to do. So funny enough that when they tell me now it's your public life, all these people just start coming through the woodwork, and here you are.
So love how that works. That's great.
Yeah. So your journey start, I can relate to the abuse part because I was 3 years old when I was abused by or tried at least to be sexually abused by an older cousin who was 18 years old, and I was just 3 years old. And I really didn't have any recognition of or remembrance per se about the situation. It was actually my mother who reminded me, because my brother, who was present during the attack or the assault or whatever you want to call it, he told my mother the story, and my mother remembered. Of course, I did not. And it's very interesting that you have yours was much longer, of course, and you transitioned through that. Talk to us how the heart helped to heal the suffering that you had inside. What was is there like a special technique that you use or share with your clients, if we're not asking too much, that you could tell us about how you use the heart for that purpose?
Well, that's really revealed in the film, because when I got to that stopping point where I saw myself looking frozen, trying to talk about love and compassion, I did what a lot of people who are in this world of spiritual consciousness, I called in, I said to my, you know, the universe, quantum intelligence, the divine heart, whatever you call it, bring me the next step then, because I'm not where I thought I was, so show me the next step. And that's when a client of mine gave me the book Radical Forgiveness, and actually I had been given it two other times and decided that with all the 15 years of therapy and all the work I'd done, I already knew about forgiveness. So the third time it comes to me, as I'm sure you've, third time's a charm, I said, I better open the cover of this book and see what it's all about. And then everything made sense, because I'd been teaching many of the principles in Radical Forgiveness, but Colin Tipping, the author, creator of the system, had a technology, and it's really much more than just a process. It's a technology that has a beginning, a middle, and an end to go through any unhealed emotion. And so it was the first time that I could really grasp onto a process would allow me access into some of those really intense feelings, you know, that I had been told from a spiritual perspective, they were not okay. So I was living in what Colin would call a spiritual bypass, which was to say that I could only experience certain emotions, that it wasn't good to express anger or sadness or even the things like hatred. Can you imagine if I was going through 10 years of this sort of intense repetitive abuse? I had some hatred stored inside of me. And so I went way out on a limb in the film, and I showed the process step by step through Radical Forgiveness, how you go back to those places where you were erroneously told, you know, where you have to leave behind. And Colin showed me step by step how to go to those places to unpack those emotions and completely free them up. So it was quite a difficult decision for me in the process of, you know, when I got real in the film to show the expression of what it's like to move this energy, and then finally moving it, then integrate the higher meaning of the radical part of forgiveness was that nothing wrong ever happened. And that challenges a lot of people, because you have to be able to hold the two paradigms in your consciousness at one time. In the human realm, any child experiencing suffering like you did or I did is wrong, and it needs to be stopped when anyone becomes conscious and aware of it. In the spiritual realm, we are given these lessons for our growth and healing. And so that challenges a lot of people. They're saying, how can you say there's nothing to forgive? Well, you have to be able to hold both paradigms in your consciousness at once, and it takes some practice. So I said in the process of the film, there's really nothing to forgive my father for, because I requested this lesson before I ever came here. Why? So I could show up authentically in my life and maybe help other people see there is a way through suffering and pain, no matter how intense, no matter how prolonged it is.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting you say that you recognize that you came to this life, so there was nothing to forgive your father with. You came to learn some lessons. And even though we often know a lot about this and we recognize it, because as we grow spiritually, we're given the insights, it's one thing knowing again and being able to actually let go and release it and recognize that fact and actually experience it. So it's very interesting you say that, because I find it also that, I know the knowledge. I have heard this before. I know that it's this way, but yet something prevents you from actually recognizing that and actually experiencing it. Last year was a very difficult year for me, because we had some family situations. My parents were quite ill for a period, so that was very challenging. But prior to that, I was also in a very, very abusive relationship, and there was so much anger, so much frustration, so much pain that I remember my mother looking at me and she says, "You have this look on your face that it scares me."
No.
Because all that negativity was inside.
Right.
And you're right. If you don't use the heart and you don't let go of that hate and you just fester in it, guess what you're going to draw into your life?
Exactly. Yeah. You get more opportunities, as I say in the film. You know, if you're resenting the things that happened in your past, it's not that the energy of the universe is negative. It's just it's neutral. It just resends it back to you for an opportunity to grow and heal. There are so many people stuck in the victim paradigm that are saying this bad thing happened to me, and so they're living with simmering resentment. And especially when you're in the realm of spirituality, one of the biggest challenges is to allow yourself to feel this emotion, to express it, and then let it go, not because you have to do something to release this thing that's bad. It's just energy. And the more you judge something, the more it has a tendency to boomerang back around and give you another chance to look at it. So I learned from Colin Tipping was really the turning point, as you asked earlier, for me to really heal from this, you know, experience of childhood abuse, where I'd had great therapy. I'd done all sorts of techniques. I would call it the alphabet soup of you know, spiritual and conventional therapies, EFT, EMDR, Psych K, all sorts of things. But it wasn't until I got really down into those emotions and saw them not as bad, but just energy that was stuck that needed to move, that it really transformed for me personally.
Yeah, absolutely. The interesting part is, in my case, what I was feeling really frustrated about and at and with was myself, because I said, I know all these things. I know how to heal. I know what the healing process is. Then what's wrong with me that I'm not doing it?
Right. The pitfall of spirituality. You know, I'm creating my own bad reality. Now, how do I get out of it? And the only way out is stopping the self-blame and the judgment, interestingly enough.
Yeah. And you have the spiritual path. Could God be confused and not know that he's choosing the wrong person, or is there something that I'm not getting? You know, that was my mentality. Uh-huh. So anyway, now you also talk about, I believe in the movie, Greg Braden discusses finding the GOES satellite, the GOES satellite.
Correct? Yeah, the GOES, geosynchronous satellites. Yes.
Yeah, it's funny because I've never heard of it, even though I've been, like I said, working in that field for quite a while. So, can you elaborate on that, or we should keep some things to motivate people to watch the film?
Well, I think this will motivate them even more, because it's like what's really going on is that the human heart emits a signal, heartbeat to heartbeat, that has a certain electromagnetic frequency, and it turns out the human heart's electromagnetic frequency is this exact same electromagnetic frequency of Earth itself. And so these GOES satellites, or the GOES satellites, are two of them orbiting the planet, and they send signals back at irregular intervals to the monitoring station to show what's going on with the Earth's electromagnetic field. And so they were looking at the data one day, and they noticed a huge spike in the Earth's electromagnetic field, and said, what on Earth is happening? And they laid the data over the timeline, and they found that this huge spike happened 10 minutes after the first plane hit the Twin Towers on 9/11. And the only thing, as Greg talks about in the film, the only thing that makes sense, even from a scientific perspective, is the our collective human heart emission of anger and sadness and compassion and all sorts of things was so powerful that it created a spike in the fields of the Earth itself. So that's another moment when I'm screening a film where lots of people have to start talking to themselves and to each other and say, oh my gosh, we didn't know this, because we are intricately connected with the fields of Earth from birth to death, as Dr. Roland McCrady says. And so that's where, you know, where we know from a spiritual perspective, we are all connected. The film took a turn in to bring the science in to say, here's the proof of it. And then we brought the indigenous elders from tribes around the world to say, you know, hey, we've known this for a long, long time, and just because your scientists can prove it now to you of the Western mind that likes proof doesn't mean it's not been true all along. And so, you know, it's a very, you know, it's a film that goes, as we say, from the earth to the heavens, from the past to the future, to invite people in to really challenge their paradigm and realize how powerful we really are. And that's the key. You know, we have the power to master the electromagnetic energy, the emotional signal coming from our hearts, to change the world. And we now know those experiments can be replicated as they are in International Peace Day, usually on September 21st. They have now monitored spikes in the Earth's electromagnetic field when millions of people come together and pray for peace on Earth, and pray for whatever is going on, and bring that emotional heart field to the fullest of its capacity. We can change what's going on. To me, that's very exciting news.
Now, when on 9/11, obviously the thoughts and the emotions of the heart probably would not have been necessarily of love, but more of sorrow and pain. Was that the part that was measured, or what exactly was the outcome of that measurement?
Well, I don't think they were measuring, you know, the actual quality of the emotion, but just the power of it. There was so much power. So, and instantaneously, about 10, 15 minutes it took for that news to circulate around the world. And so who knows, you know, a lot of it, what Greg Braden says on the film, it was untrained human emotion. So some people were feeling compassion, fear, you know, anger, outrage. And so now, though, they can see a similar spike when we're praying for peace or praying to avert, you know, international crisis, you know, when conscious people come together. So I think it's both, you know, it's both all range of emotion. I don't think there's anything to say this is the love spike or the fear, but who knows? It wouldn't surprise me if at some point we got there to be able to see that, because we can certainly see it as individuals when we connect ourselves to the heart math technology called the M-Wave 2, or the inner balance device, where we can connect to our smartphone and we can see what is that signal look that's coming from our heart. And when we're frustrated and angry, it literally looks like a seismograph of an earthquake. And when we're at peace and we're calm, it's a very smooth up and down wave.
Yes, yes. There are machines, you're right. I mean, not too long ago, I had this machine that you put your hands on, and it measured the frequency of the heart along with other heart vibrations and other vibrations of the body. It kind of, your statement really answers a question that I've been having since probably 2 or 3 years. About 2 or 3 years ago, I wrote a book, Hope Reigns Beyond 2012. And in the book, I talk about the magnetic field of the planet being heavier than what it's supposed to be. And I couldn't quite understand how that would happen, because even though, granted, I have, you know, some experience in scientific matters and some knowledge, there's still a lot of things. I don't know a lot of things about physics. There are still a lot of things I don't know out there. And some of them don't make sense when the information is provided to me. So it's interesting now that you mention this, because this would make a lot of sense. I knew it was something very strong. That was my understanding. It was a very intense effect on the magnetic field of the planet. But now that explains it to me, why it's going to be that strong, because I was trying to figure out what's going to happen, like, at a physical level that would cause that. Like, are there going to be earthquakes? Are there going to be polar shifts and stuff like that that would impact that? Or it's something else? And obviously, it's a combination of, and it would make sense that the human heart would be part of that.
Yeah, it's part of the collective, and it's an interesting time now in 2013 that the sun's pole is actually halfway reversed. And so that every, you know, 13 years in the solar cycle, the sun goes through a magnetic pole reversal, and we're at a solar peak. And the Institute of Heart Math also talks about the influence of the sun's electromagnetic and mass coronal ejection bursts on our consciousness. It impacts our ability to think clearly and to sleep well, and our emotions fluctuate up and down. So I always tell my clients, you know, check if you're feeling some sort of unexplained thing, check on spaceweather.com, and you'll find out, you know, they're there are lots and lots of solar bursts that directly impact our human physiology. And so that makes it easier for those of us who are going out, you know, I don't even know what's going on. Well, check it out. You know, we're a 20% chance of geomagnetic storms coming up tomorrow, which is true. Right. And that affects our consciousness. And that's not, you know, our spiritual things. It's proven now. It's getting close to being proven, I'd say scientifically, because they know we're in this interactive field between our human electromagnetic field and the larger electromagnetic fields of the Earth and the Moon and the Sun. And we know that, but it's nice to have the proof.
Yeah. I wanted you to share with our listeners a technique, if you would, from the documentary. At the same time, before you can do that, I'd like to ask, by watching this film, what have been some of the outcomes, results from a personal perspective or experience after watching this movie? How has it touched people? Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, it's been a wonderful experience to share my film with audiences and to be there. You know, people can get it and watch it in their own home, but to see it in a group is really powerful because we're creating a group heart field. And the first thing that really happens is people keep sitting there in their seats. They don't get up and run for the exits because something has happened. And I've had people describe to me this enough, so I know it's not just, you know, random. So they'll sit there and say, something happened in this film, and I can't quite initially explain it. That's because their heart's open. It's an experiential film. Your heart center actually opens in watching it, even though you're processing it through your mind and the cognitive faculties. There's a heart opening that happens. And then people are very grateful, you know, that I've shared my life path, you know, pretty personally on the film. It's a small part of it, but it's a very important part. And then the whole seventh chapter, and it's created in seven chapters, is about the tools and the teachings of the heart. What can we do? And this is a big difference between a lot of films that are out there that tell you a lot of information and then leave people going, well, how do I do this? So we spend some time towards the end of the film showing people, here are a variety of things that you can do to start this heart-based journey or to deepen into the journey you're already on. And so people are very grateful that we don't leave them just going, well, you know, what next? Well, you know, here's some things immediately you can do and apply into your own life.
Yeah. I read somewhere once, I don't know where, but I guess that's not the important thing. And I do believe this very deeply, that when you read a book or when you watch a documentary, when you watch a movie, when you listen to music, all things have a vibration. And so it would not surprise me that you're with all these people involved, that there is a common purpose and a common goal. And obviously the heart is the focus of the documentary. So it would seem natural that vibration, that message, that energy is there, and it impacts the hearts of those watching it, which would make a lot of sense to me.
It does, and that's why we included personal vignettes of people showing their vulnerability on screen, not only myself, but our director of the film. And when my process stopped because I wasn't, you know, showing up authentically, Skip Thomas was diagnosed with cancer about the same time. And so he ended up telling about his heart-based journey and that experience and how he was led deeper into his own heart. And he's healthy today. But I think that really touches people when, you know, men and women alike show up with their vulnerability and say, you know, this is the place that has provided the deepest meaning in my life. It's not, you know, who I think I am and the people I know and the things I do. It's how I feel in connection to my own heart and my purpose here that has made a big difference in my life. And that opens other people's hearts to say, you know, it's time for me to do this too. And I'm not, you know, if these people can do it, you know, maybe so can I.
Yeah. I agree. I fortunately never had the issue with cancer, but there were three moments in my life which were very dark, and it's not something that I shared with people that are very close, but it's not something that I hide or something that necessarily I open up about. But they were very, I would think they're fairly close together. And one was a time when I was doing a lot of self-empowering work on myself, and then I stopped, and it's like I crashed, and I tried to overdose. I ended up in the hospital. They got everything out, and I don't think I've shared this with anybody but very close friends. So that was a very dark moment. And shortly after, I was in this relationship that was abusive. But the interesting part is sometimes it's not just abusive on one side. Sometimes it becomes abusive because abused people can oftentimes, if not healed and if not cleansed and if not brought to wholeness again, can become also abusive. So I think it was a mutually abusive relationship, unfortunately, for both of us. And then obviously the situation with my family last year. So I have to say, even though it was very, very hard, it was the most enlightening and at the same time very powerful and healing experiences too. Learning about myself, crashing, and then being able to get up again and learning the lessons, the hard lessons that we sometimes run away from. So it's very powerful. Would you share now one of your techniques? Would that be all right? And what exactly, we have about 6 more minutes left on our time frame. If possible, I would also like to do in the last minute or so your song, because it's so beautiful. I would love to for the listeners to hear it, if that's okay with you, because yeah, it is recorded, so I don't know if that infringes on your copyrights.
No, that's fine. I love it when people hear it. It's just kind of a long song. It's 5 minutes, but there's a process in the film that we talk about that is easy to do, and it only takes a few minutes. It's called Quick Coherence, and that was created by the Institute of Heart Math, and I'm a licensed provider, and I have their permission to share this with audiences on air or in person. So what we basically want to do is just start focusing on the heart. That's the first step, is heart focus. So you just drop your attention down to the center of your chest. And for some people who have really been, you know, all up in their head and thinking and trying to think their way through things, you really have to even touch your heart physically to make that contact with the physiological heart. And there's 3 levels of the heart that we can talk about on the next show, but we're really connecting with the physiological heart. That is a phenomenal organ, not just a circulation, but of the endocrine system and the neurologic system. So we just focus on the heart and just feel the heart presence, and then start to imagine you're breathing through the heart. And that's step 2, is heart breathing. So it's heart focus first and heart breathing. So we naturally just tend to slow the breath down, and the ideal breath pacing is about 5 seconds on the in-breath and 5 seconds on the out-breath. And that alone just starts to calm the autonomic nervous system from those stresses that build up moment to moment, day by day. Mm. And then the third step that we bring in this process was where the real heart power comes in. And that's just feeling a sense of gratitude. So just feeling grateful for something small in your life. It can be very small, that it's a nice day, that fall is happening and the leaves are turning. And grateful for the right timing for everything, and just being present, being grateful for being here. And so those 3 steps alone start to create a different signal, heartbeat to heartbeat, out into the field. So you with those 3 steps, especially the cue of gratitude, you become a contributor to what's happening on earth versus a detractor. When you're under stress and judgment and anger and chaos, you're sending that encoded emotional signal. And that's the heart's power. And we just take a moment to shift in those 3 steps. We start contributing to what benefits all of us on the planet.
Right. Yeah, that's very beautiful. I like that. That is absolutely, when you are grateful, it shifts your energy. And it doesn't have to take I've heard this before, even if you're in a bad mood, and if you can manage to smile, to force yourself to laugh, even if you have to force yourself, it shifts and it shifts the heart, it shifts the mind. And when that shifts, your perspective about the situation also shifts. So you're able to look at it from a little bit more objective, perspective. Okay. Would you like to, play the song for us, or would you like me to play it? How would you want to do that?
Well, I wouldn't know how to play it from my side, so I guess you guys can play it, and then, you know, just we can let people know they can purchase the film or rent it, you know, on my website, sacredjourneyoftheheart.com, and see what we're talking about. Dive into the process and see what catches their hearts.
Okay, I'm trying to pull it up. Let's see if I can do that. And yes, please, please purchase the film, and you know, just I think you will all benefit from it, and not just to mention all the wonderful things you shared with us on, you know, on the show here. I'm trying to. I know I played it before, and I just love the music. So I'm. You'll have to forgive me if I'm not doing a very good job, but.
Able to do it. You'd think I could be technical at this point, but I usually have like good technical people doing things behind the scenes.
Oh, wait a minute. I think we got it.
Okay.
Well, I want to wish everybody a wonderful, wonderful night until the next show. And please come back. And I leave you guys with this beautiful song from Rhonda Prince. There isn't? Okay, hold on.
Connected, feeling love.